Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to the latest Hawks Talk podcast presented by your Chicagoland, Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I am Pat Boyle. Jamal Mayers and Adam Bursch will join me shortly to discuss some of the recent additions to the Blackhawks lineup. But we start this podcast with a conversation I had with Patrick Kane before the Winnipeg game. We discussed how the vets have embraced the youth movement this season, his chemistry with Nick Schmaltz, and Brent Seabrook's 1,000th game milestone. That's where we start our one-on-one with Kane.
I would say a historian of the game, but you pay attention a lot to numbers, I think, from what I've seen over the years. What does 1,000 games for Brent Seabrook mean to you?
Well, I think it's a pretty incredible number for anyone, but to get there this quick and in your career shows you're pretty durable and that you've played through a lot of injuries and dealt with a lot of things. So, very impressive. Obviously, very happy for him to reach that milestone. He's been a warrior for the Blackhawks for however many years he's been here, and great teammate, great leader, one of the guys that's just fun to be around every day and talk to and hang out with. And he's obviously had a great career on the ice too, with numerous big goals, numerous overtime goals, and his leadership is second to none.
We always talk about the leadership. I think most of us point to the Detroit series where he goes in the box and talks to Johnny. Is there a moment you point to in your decade with him that you said, you know what, that's where he was a really effective leader?
Yeah, I mean, I probably have some certain stories and certain things you probably can't mention on the air, but the thing I think is amazing about him is, whether he's playing well or whether he's not, you know, he's always into the game and he's always a team first guy. And I think if you guys had the opportunity and the treat to see what he's like in the locker room, just before the game, leading up to the game, very vocal. Trying to get the boys going, getting into it. Sometimes he's serious, sometimes he's funny. So he's always into that part of the game. Even today with a bunch of new guys coming up and, everyone introducing themselves, he's already joking around with the guys and making up nicknames and different things like that. So he's a great guy to be around, great guy overall.
He says he's funny. He said, but you got to ask the boys if I'm funny. Is he funny, sneaky funny?
He's like... He's one of those guys that, like, tries real hard, you know? So he'll hit, like, you know, he might hit 2 out of 10 jokes, okay. And he's got, like, you know, you remember those 2 good jokes.
Sure.
But
he'll remind you about the 2 good
the
ones.
The other 8 are crickets, you know? So it's, like, it's sometimes it's almost funnier when he, like, tries to be funny and no one laughs because it makes it even funnier, you know?
Right.
So I guess he's funny in that way. But he has some zingers, too, and, like I said before, it's with everyone. It's not just with 1 or 2 guys. It's with everyone in the locker room. So, we'll definitely call him funny.
You talked about all the new faces that are coming in here. It's been an interesting year, but recently there's a lot of new faces. Are you starting to see where some things may shake out long term, or how are you approaching all the different teammates that have been a part of the mix here the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, just day by day. Whatever happens that day, you know, that's what we're going with. Whether you're playing with new players or meeting new guys, it's a little bit different kind of than what we're used to. But I think the biggest thing is just try to, you know, make these guys feel welcome, help them any way you can, and try to help them learn, because obviously none of them have really played the pro game before, especially at this level. So just try to help them along. But it seems like we got a lot of young guys in the fold, and some guys that can be players that can compete for us and help us win games. So I guess that's the biggest thing down the road. So we're trying to help them as much as we can.
One thing you said to me last summer was you wanted to get away from it being the veteran guys and the young guys and make it one team, meld this group together. Do you think you guys accomplished that this year?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I still think there's probably certain things we can improve on. And, you know, some of these young guys that come in and maybe they're a little intimidated with kind of what's gone on in the past year. And, you know, I think the thing we kind of stress is just let them be themselves, add whatever they can to the room. And, you know, anyone's free to speak up and say what they want and try to help this team along. So that's kind of, you know, I know, you know, when you're a rookie, you want to come in and be quiet and kind of just absorb everything and certain things like that. But we want these guys to be themselves and talk in the locker room, talk before games, be vocal, try to, you know, everyone's a leader here. So that's what we're trying to kind of push with this group now.
And have you felt that chemistry with Schmaltz has even taken a couple more steps? I know you guys haven't been together at all times, but like I thought in the overtime was a perfect example of the chemistry that you guys have built that maybe you would not have been able to make those passes between each other, you know, even 4 months ago.
Yeah, well, we're playing together tomorrow, so that'll be fun to play with him again. I know when we were playing together there, he was playing pretty well and he was hot there. So, you know, we were building that chemistry up. We started the season pretty well together. Might have went dry for a few games. That's why they split us up. And, you know, along the way, you got certain guys coming in, so you're playing with different guys. But, yeah, I really enjoy playing with him. I think he's a guy that, you know, I can really build that chemistry with and take it to the next level. Like you said, overtime was fun the other night. Just simple plays, you know, whether it's giving goes or giving it and moving it and getting it back. Things that he can do. He's obviously very fast. There's a lot of speed. So he's still very young, and he's going to prove, get better. He had a great season this year. So I'm just looking forward to building that chemistry tomorrow and hopefully throughout the summer and come back flying next year.
Last one. You're leaning toward Worlds. Have you made that decision?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens here. I know we got 5 games left here, and then probably really sit down and think about it and what I want to do. You know, it'd be fun to represent the United States again. So we'll see where we're at after the season.
Our thanks to Patrick Kane. More on 88's chemistry with Schmaltz coming up with Jammer and Burrish in just a second. But first,
whether you're on the go or stuck at work late, don't miss a second of your Chicago Blackhawks. All NBC Sports Chicago games, including pre- and post-games, can be live-streamed on the NBC Sports app. Wherever you are, you're there.
Back on the Hawks Talk podcast, I am joined by Jamal Mayers and Adam Burrish. All right, boys, I was going to start with Patrick Kane, but the Scott Foster story stole the show on Thursday night. That's the beauty of sports. You think you're coming to the United Center, and you think, well, okay, we're going to talk about a guy that you guys both played with in Brent Seabrook, and who's, you know, the quiet leader in the sense that I don't think he gets enough notoriety around town as being the leader of this team. And, by the way, we've got a Dylan Sakura, a Hobie Baker Award finalist who's making his debut. And then Anton Forsberg goes down in the warm-up, and they put Colin Delia in to make his NHL debut. And all of a sudden, okay, that's a pretty good story too. And then in the third period, Delia gets cramps. And Scott Foster, a 36-year-old beer league goalie, accountant by day, comes to the rescue, stops 7 shots on Brent Seabrook's night, and the rest is, as they say, history.
And a game against the Jets, who have won, I believe, 7 games in a row, and were playing extremely well all season long, have already 104 points on the season, destined for great things. And You said it, Pat. You come prepared for one thing, and everything got just thrown up in the air. And you know what? This still is about Brent Seabrook and what he accomplished. There's no question about it, and what he means to his teammates and his leadership and what he means to this community is absolutely huge. But it's awesome, too, for him to be able to bring out his family and the people that he cares and loves the most out onto the ice and recognize them because they've been along for this journey with him as well. So, but to think about this kid and what his day was like just today, not even just today, from probably around 4 o'clock this afternoon, things got changed quickly.
And as you pointed out, Adam, on the postgame show, I mean,
the emergency backup. It's an interesting life. There's a list. Every arena has one. And, you know, he's been in this spot before, Scott, 12 to 15 times, you know, been here waiting for that call. Tonight, he finally got the call.
Yeah, so they got in town here in Chicago, and then if you're in Winnipeg, if you're in Calgary, if you're in Florida, every one of these teams, they've got 8 to 15 guys that play hockey, really. I mean, they're not professionals. They're not they have no accolades. They're just guys that play hockey that are in the area, and you need to have 8 or 12 of them or 15 because they have lives too. They've got other things going on. They're not hockey players, so they kind of rotate who on certain days has to show up to the United Center, bring your equipment in. They set it down. They go upstairs to the press box. They get a free meal. They get a free ticket, one ticket, to the Blackhawks game. They sit and watch a game. They go back down the elevator. They get in their car, and they drive home, and that's an emergency backup goal. You can play for actually either team. It's not just for the Blackhawks. If the Winnipeg Jets had two goalies get hurt tonight, Scott Foster would have been playing for the Winnipeg Jets, but it was the Blackhawks, so he goes in and plays tonight. This guy is an accountant. He plays at Johnny's Ice House for the Sharks in the Elite League over at Johnny's Ice House, let me mention. all of a sudden, he's sitting in the locker room, probably with Jonathan Toews, who's injured, probably with the trainers, just sitting on the couch watching the game. He had his equipment on because they told him, hey, just put your equipment on in case. And then all of a sudden, with 14 minutes and 30 seconds left, he trots out there to the United Center. And then in about 7 or 8 minutes later, the whole United Center is chanting, Foster, Foster.
That's awesome. I mean,
are you kidding me?
What a great story.
It's unbelievable. And to think, I didn't know this rule, but the reason why he wasn't on the bench, Joel was saying in his presser, was that allowed him to get a warm-up. Because you notice, which you never do unless it's an exhibition game, preseason games, he got a chance to take some practice shots. So, and you know the guys doing those shots were just like, let's just hit this kid. But he made like two distinctive great saves that I remember. One, he came sliding across, made himself big, hit him in the shoulder.
On Stastny?
Yeah, on Stastny. That was a great save.
It was.
Then he made another one too, I believe, on Bufflin with the big howitzer and almost took his glove into the net, a la like what used to happen with Al MacInnis when he would shoot the puck. But, you know, he must have been just pooping his pants on the way onto that ice.
Well, the guy said, you know, the security guys down by the loading dock, they're the ones that help him get his gear into the building. And they said when he walked in, they said he told them that. He goes, I hope I don't have to play. I'm scared to death right now. Sure enough, he ends up playing in the frickin' hockey games. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible. And Frankie, the guy who we all know here at the United Center, is the one that carried his bag in and helped him carry his bag in, and he was dying laughing. I think the one moment that really stuck out to me was Joel Quenneville. When he comes out of the locker room and Joel Quenneville looks out of his shoulder and sees this kid he just met 2 hours ago, and Joel Quenneville just starts laughing.
Yeah.
And he goes, have fun, kid. Get out there. I mean, what are you going to do? And then after the game, and I hope on TV it gets some play, the final horn sounds and the camera zooms in on Foster's face, and he just kind of has like this, what do you know, guys? That just kind of that aw shucks look on his face. It was priceless. Well, what a moment.
He's wearing his Western Michigan helmet from 15 years ago. You guys have probably changed uniform colors and whatnot three times since. And you remember last year, Eric Szymborski, remember when Corey had the appendectomy in Philadelphia? And so the same thing, the emergency backup situation, guy in Philadelphia comes, and he just backed up.
Yep.
It was Darling or whoever it was. I don't know if it was Darling. I think somebody else was in net. And he became kind of a local folk hero. We had him on the pregame show. And
he's
all
not
this.
Even from here.
And he never played. He never even got in the game.
Right. Yep.
You know, like we made a big deal about, like, hey, thanks. You know, I mean, at least, you know, Foster actually saw seven NHL shots and stopped them all.
One thing we hadn't really talked about. How good did the Blackhawks play defensively when he went in there? They were blocking shots. They were protecting the house. They hunkered down defensively.
Maybe they needed more Scott Foster this year.
I was telling you, that's the best they played defensively for the stretch of 15 minutes. They allowed 7 shots on him, and they actually even killed a penalty in the process.
You know, at PB, I talked about it in the postgame. But think of how many players, and I don't want to say guys are mad about this or guys that are in the minors would get mad because I think they would laugh about it, but how many guys are playing in the minor leagues and playing all over the world, grinding, riding buses, playing in Russia, playing in Finland, playing in China, trying to get a chance to play an NHL hockey game and grinding professionally, making very little money doing it just for that one hope. Glass, who played for the Blackhawks, who's played in every bad league in the world, finally gets his opportunity at 35 years old. Is that how old he was? 34?
32.
32 years old, gets his first NHL game after playing all over the world. these guys are grinding. And all of a sudden, Scott Foster, an accountant from Oak Brook, Illinois, I think he said he was where he works, or Chicago call it. He's an accountant, happens to just be one of the 12 rotating emergency goalies, and he gets to play in an NHL game before hundreds and thousands of players that are grinding all over the world. It's an absolutely incredible story. And like I said on the pregame, I guess the lesson is, you know, pick your bar league team, your beer league team smart.
What other sport could that happen in?
Other sport, right?
No.
I mean, there always will be backups.
Yeah, pitchers in baseball, there's always 10 of them sitting
sure.
there.
Sure, yeah, you'll never
or
see
Or you'll put
this.
A third baseman and he'll pitch if you really run into trouble.
In football, you got a backup quarterback or two, and if that guy gets hurt, a wide receiver's going in there that played quarterback in college.
It's the only sport where a guy from the
stands
a week ago was in the stands could actually play in the game.
Yeah. Crazy. He probably had his own jersey that he could have worn.
No kidding.
You know?
So let's switch gears back to – so we started this podcast playing the one-on-one I had with Patrick Kane. And the biggest thing I took away from the conversation with 88 was that he feels that the chemistry he developed this year with Schmaltz was very noticeable and more noticeable than any of his other teammates in that room. And it got me to thinking like, okay, last year I understand the team decided to – we're going to try to jumpstart Taves – and so we're going to go get Saad, and even though it's going to hurt production with Patrick Kane, moving Panarin, we're going to Patrick, he'll be fine with whoever. And that's true to a certain degree. But I think what we've seen from Schmaltz this year and Kane, it deserves to be a focal point next year, and that Kane deserves to have a wingman, in this case a centerman, that has the chemistry that can keep his game at the elite level that it has been. And I really hope the organization takes that to heart next year.
And you know what? One of the things, and to his, which isn't a negative because he's such a good person, but on any other team that I played for, and I won't mention the names of the superstars, when things weren't going the way that they wanted them to go or they weren't playing with who they wanted to play with, they spoke up and it got fixed and it got adjusted because you have to keep those guys happy. Problem with Keener is he would never complain or say anything, but I absolutely agree. I think that they have great chemistry together. His numbers did fall back this year, obviously, because he missed Panarin. I think Schmaltz done a nice job of taking his game to the next level, and I think he has another step to go, and it'll be interesting. And I certainly agree with you that hopefully the organization is cognizant of that and aware and tries to allow, you know, because Keener, you know how he is. He's constantly one of the few guys I've ever seen. Every single summer, he's trying to get better.
Yeah.
You know, some guys are just trying to maintain. He's trying to get better.
So much so that, you know, in the conversation I had, I asked him if he's going to go to the World Championships, and it sounds like he's leading. He didn't say he would. He's going to sit down. But the competitor that he is, the fact that, you know, he hasn't gone very far in the Stanley Cup playoffs the last 2 years and won't be a part of it this year. You said he always wants to improve his game. I think he's going to go to the World Championships. You were going to say something.
And I think he also, in that interview, I think he said he kind of felt bad that he didn't go last year.
Yes.
He felt like he probably, after it started, he felt like he should have gone. But getting back to finding a wingman, I certainly think Nick Schmaltz is that guy for him, too. And I think that the chemistry they had for the first, say, 20, 25, 30 games of this season, it was incredible. And then go back to the last, what was the overtime game that they had where those two guys were just Harlem Globetrotters
against
the San Jose game. You can see that they really enjoy playing together. I know they like each other. They get along away from the rink. They talk a lot in the summer. So they have great chemistry. And I think part of the reason that they got separated this year and that was kind of lost was just because of the situation this team was in and knowing they were going to miss the playoffs. I think for the organization, if they want to see what young guys can play and what they can do, you put them with Patrick Kane just because he's one of the best players in the world. He's certainly the best player on this hockey team. So if you want to get young players and evaluate talent to see how if they can fit on a top six role, we'll put them with the best player in the world and let them see how they do. Now, unfortunately, that slowed that chemistry down that him and Schmaltz had. I think if this was a different situation where they were in a playoff hunt and they were going to make the playoffs and they were going to make a deep run, these two guys would never have been separated, and I think they would have just kind of ran with it. But I think going into next year, I think certainly I'm assuming you will see those two together, and if the season goes as planned, I don't see any reason why you split those kind of guys up, those two guys up.
Do you think, though, there might be something? I mean, he's a restricted free agent, Schmaltz is, right, after this season? Do you think do you think there's something to be said? Well, you know what? We've got all these cap issues as well, and if we can we're not going to make the playoffs anyway. If we can keep his numbers down.
Now one more year probably, right? Three-year entry-level deal they sign?
I'm not sure which one he's on, but, you know, maybe that's a concern as well. Maybe something that we're not aware of that they're not trying to hold him back, but, you know, let's be honest. The reality is if he has 70 points, it's going to cost him a lot more money.
Sure. Looking it up right now to see where he's at with his contract situation.
But, I mean, I still think if this season went different, those two guys would never have been separated. You know, if they were playing in the playoffs in six games after this regular – five games after the regular season is open, those two guys would be starting the playoffs together. Who would be playing with them? I don't know.
So, yeah, Schmaltz has 2 years. So this year and then next year, and then he'd be restricted.
It'll be after his third year on this contract.
All right, so we're going to audible here. I was going to ask you guys to give me just your initial thoughts on Victor Edsel and maybe where you saw the ceiling for Dylan Sakura. Let's table that to a week. Let's end this bad boy with a tip of the cap to Brent Seabrook. Yeah. Give me your best Brent Seabrook story. From your playing days, or it could even be what he called you a couple weeks ago after he heard something that we said on the postgame show, right?
For me, one of the things that I love and I appreciate about Seabrook, and we talked about it in the show, how great of a teammate he is. You hear Patrick Kane talk about him. It wasn't about his great overtime goals. It was about how good of a teammate, how great of a leader he is in that locker room. One of the things I love and appreciate most about Seabrook that I don't think enough guys do is when he has a problem or there's something on his chest, he calls you, he pulls you aside, he says it right to your face, he tells you how he's feeling, what he's thinking, and he talks to you like a man, he airs out his issues, he doesn't let it fester, he doesn't say it to somebody else behind your back, he comes right to you, and I appreciate that, and that's one of the reasons why I think he is such a good leader on this team is because he goes up to people and he talks to them like men, and the situation that comes to mind for me was it was the first year that any of us had ever played a playoff game. It was the first time Brent Seabrook, myself, Patrick Sharp, Patrick Kane, Bufflin, Brower, any of us had ever played in the playoffs. We were playing the Calgary Flames, and we were having a pretty good series, and Jarrell McGinley was obviously their star player that year, and we're getting into game four. In the first three games, I was just a little loudmouth pest out there, and I was just riding Jarrell McGinley, and Quenneville was giving me shifts against him because he saw I was getting under his skin. I was riding him. I was bothering him. He was having a very average, mediocre series for him, and I thought I was doing my job. And after the game three, we were up 2-1 in the series, and Brent Seabrook, you know, pulls me aside and kind of gets into me a little bit. He goes, "Gosh darn it, Adam," and I'll change the words a little bit, but "would you just leave Jarrell McGinley alone?" And I said, "Seabs, why, man? I'm doing my job. I'm getting him off his game. He's been awful." He's like, "Okay, well, you got him where you want him now. Now leave him alone, because now he's getting ticked off at us, and he's chipping pucks into our corner, and he's running us through the wall." He goes, "You don't have to pick yourself up off the glass off those hits every time. We do. So just leave him alone and let him sleep. He's already out of this series. You've already got him out of it, so just let him sleep. Now don't fire him up, because he's just taking runs at us, and now we're going to have to deal with these runs day after day and feel the pain from it." And I didn't look at it from that perspective. I thought I was just doing my job, and I didn't realize it was affecting those guys on the back end a little bit. And I appreciated it. And I thought to myself, you know what, Seabs, you're right. And I shut up the rest of that series to a Jarrell McGinley. I think I picked on Dion Phaneuf then the rest of that series. But I left Jarrell McGinley alone, and we went on to win that series. But I appreciated that he was on his mind, it was bothering him, and he came right up to me and said it, and he said it stern. He said it was in my face when he said it, but all good. I think that's what professional sports is about. That's what good pros do, and that's why Brent Seabrook is one of the greatest professionals and one of the greatest teammates that I've ever played with.
I'm not going to ask you how you used to chirp Dion Phaneuf and what the topic was. I can guess what it was. Jammer, give me your favorite a Brent Seabrook story or best memory?
Well, for me, it's probably similar to a lot of Blackhawks. And, you know, it's just his authentic way about him and his leadership. It's not fake. It's just who he is as a person and that character that he has. And for me, it's when we were down 3-1 against, the Detroit series there in 2013. And he ended up talking to Johnny and calming him down and getting him back. He was kind of a little off the rails and took two back-to-back penalties and wasn't really being effective in the series. And he went in and calmed him down and told him that we're going to need him. And, you know, very few people had the guts to do that or could have the respect from Johnny to be able to do that. So that for me was a huge moment. And there's always little moments throughout that people don't see that really show his character and why he's such a good leader. He's there to, like you said, to, you know, smack you around if things aren't, you're not doing the way you should be doing it. But he's also going to be there to pick you up if you're struggling. So he has a great sense and great temperature for the room. And, yeah. And I think that his ability to see not just himself, because he does like his routine and prepare, he's certainly aware of how everyone else is contributing and what they're doing and not doing to help us win.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that you guys in that Detroit game 7, after Chalmerson's goal is taken off the board, the old phrase, let's go out and win that one again. That was incredible. And then Siebes gets, you know, one of his three overtime playoff goals in that one to clinch that series. Great stuff, boys. It was a wild night. Scott Foster stealing the show. Our thanks to Jamal and to Adam for joining us this week on the podcast. And our thanks to Patrick Kane, who also joined us this week as well. Thank you for listening to the Hawks Talk podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I'm Pat Boyle. We'll catch you next time.